I'm sure most people watching this are aware of the former KGB agent turned CIA informant Yuri Bezmenov. In the 1980s, Bezmenov went around the USA speaking mostly to conservative groups about how the USA had been infiltrated with communist agents sent from Moscow. When many people started to pay attention to what was going on in politics on YouTube a few years back, many of his interviews and lectures went viral. And for a lot of people, this was one of their first steps to having their eyes opened. He describes a four-stage process of demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. A deliberate Soviet attempt at infiltration and subversion. Now, many aspects of this story are true, but I'm afraid that there are some details old Yuri left out. And besides, you've got to ask yourself, how is it that you've heard of this guy? How is it that millions of people have watched Yuri Bezmenov videos here on YouTube? Why is it, as I pointed out a couple of months ago, that Yuri has been mainstreamed? Well, I'm going to answer some of those questions shortly, but first, let's take a quick break.
If you like Academic Agents content on this channel, sign up for a course on the Academic Agency. He's now offering Foundations of Economics. Click the link in the show description and level up your econ knowledge.
Okay, so what's wrong with the story Yuri Bezmenov tells? I will explain. But before I do so, let me note that in this video I'm going to be using very mainstream sources, by which I mean left-wing journals and Wikipedia entries, in order to show that there is no aspect of what I'm telling you that could be described as conspiracy theory. This is all completely open information, freely available to anyone with access to Google. Okay, with that noted, the problem with Yuri's narrative is that the ultimate source of the demoralization program he describes was not Moscow, but Frankfurt, and specifically the Frankfurt School, which I am sure you have heard of. It included a group of radical thinkers, including Theodore Adorno, Max Horkheimer, Eric Fromm, and Herbert Marcuse. The Institute for Social Research at Goethe University in Frankfurt was set up in 1923 by the Marxist Karl Grunberg. It was bankrolled by the son of a German millionaire grain merchant. Importantly, though, this was an alternative branch of Marxism which was against the Soviet project and sought to analyze its problems, which is to say that it was entirely independent of Moscow. Max Horkheimer took over as director of the Institute in 1930 and then recruited Adorno, Fromm, and later Marcuse, among others. After the rise of Hitler in 1933, Horkheimer moved the Institute from Frankfurt to Geneva. Eric Fromm went on a trip to the United States around this time, where he persuaded Columbia University, based in New York, to grant the Institute for Social Research refuge while Germany was under Nazi rule. And so the Frankfurt School new home from 1935 was New York City. While there, the Frankfurt School devoted much thought to what had gone wrong in Germany, from their perspective, and located the problem in both the German mindset, which is to say the psychology of the German people, and in German culture, which is to say the cultural modes which perpetuate this psychology. Antisemitism, for example, was diagnosed as a pathology, a symptom of the authoritarian personality type. Horkheimer made a number of strategic alliances in New York. Most importantly, he allied the Frankfurt School with the American Jewish Committee, a non-profit Jewish advocacy group which is headquartered in New York, which had some, but not total, influence in Washington. The Frankfurt School proposed some very radical solutions to the problem of fascism in Europe. As early as 1941, Horkheimer had drawn up plans for nothing less than the total re-education of the German people, the aims of which were, quote, the mental transformation of the German human being, culture, and society towards democracy, morality which respects human dignity, and the world. In 1942, Herbert Marcuse started working directly for the Office of Strategic Services, which was the predecessor organization of the CIA. Now, I should be clear here, this is not to suggest that the Frankfurt School or Marcuse were directly in charge of running US government policy or anything like it. A country like the USA is big and complex. The government is not a monolith. It has different networks and different nodes of power. For example, for almost the entirety of his time working for the government, Marcuse was under surveillance by the FBI under suspicion of being a communist infiltrator. And in fact, this dynamic of these Frankfurt School thinkers operating in the US government at the same time that the Red Scare was going on is a source of much confusion. But all of this should be made much clearer in your own mind if you see the Frankfurt School thinkers as the new left, entirely independent of and even against Moscow and the Soviet Union, who are the old left. As Marcuse and others, such as Franz Neumann and Otto Kirchheimer, joined the Office of Strategic Services in Washington, D.C., Horkheimer and Adorno relocated to California. Horkheimer had been appointed as director of the scientific division of the American Jewish Committee, and it was in this capacity he started his Five Studies in Prejudice and the aforementioned research into the authoritarian personality type. When the Second World War ended, the Allied powers embarked on a program called denazification, a vast propaganda effort essentially to convert the German population from supporting Nazism to supporting liberal democracy, in the case of West Germany, and to supporting socialism or communism in the case of East Germany. The administration for this program was divided into four zones, one under the Americans, one under the British, one under the Soviets, and one under the French. This is significant because we can see side by side how the denazification effort, as directed by Washington and Moscow respectively, were applied. Note that Horkheimer's plan to completely re-educate and remold the German mindset from the ground up, or I should say from the top down, was here effectively adopted as the official policy of the US federal government. In order to achieve their aims, General Eisenhower set up the Institute on Re-education of the Axis countries, stating, "Only an inflexible long-term occupation authority will be able to lead the Germans to a fundamental revision of their recent political philosophy." This was under the auspices of the Psychological Warfare Division of the Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Force. Now, if the phrase psychological warfare sounds familiar to you, perhaps it is because our old friend Yuri Bezmenov uses it to describe the four-stage process of demoralization and subversion. Now, in practice, the Americans faced two quite separate problems here. The first was the very practical problem that if they arrested anyone who would work for the Nazi Party or the German government in any capacity at all, it would result in having to process over 35 million people. The second was the more intangible issue of the everyday thoughts and beliefs of the German people. The logistical nightmare of the first problem led the US Army to declare that most German people had simply been brainwashed by Nazi propaganda. So efforts were intensified on the second problem. The US Army seized 37 German newspapers, 6 radio stations, 314 theaters, 642 cinemas, 101 magazines, 237 book publishers, and 7,384 book dealers and printers. Over 30,000 books were banned. All copies of these books were confiscated and destroyed. The representative of the military directorate admitted that the order was in principle no different from the Nazi book burnings. Remember, always accuse your enemy of that which you are guilty yourself. Now, although in the short term only high-ranking Nazis were individually punished and most Germans were not, under the logic that they had been brainwashed, in the longer term the official policy of the American denazification program was to get Germans to accept collective responsibility for what had happened, including posters which showed atrocities and said things like, "This is your fault," and "These atrocities, your fault." And this is chiefly where the Frankfurt School's work on fascism being some sort of inborn psychological trait of the German mindset started to take root as official policy. In Fascism, the Career of a Concept, Paul Gottfried chronicles how the definition of fascism, or the authoritarian personality type, expanded far beyond the specific atrocities of the Nazis and came to be seen as something endemic in German culture and history as a whole, even going so far as to implicate Christianity itself. Sidney Bernstein, the chief of the Psychological Warfare Division in 1946, said, "The aim of this program was to shake and humiliate the Germans and prove to them, beyond any possible challenge, that these German crimes against humanity were committed and that the German people, and not just the Nazis and the SS, bore responsibility." In fact, America forced Germany through all four stages of the process that Yuri Bezmenov describes, and by the 1970s had been largely successful. Certainly, if you look at Germany today, you can see just how successful they were. I think it's notable that most of the support for the AfD, for example, which is the far-right group, or the so-called far-right group in Germany, is in East Germany, not in West Germany. In contrast, the Soviets, in their denazification efforts, did practically none of this. They were much more brutal and much less sophisticated in their methods, simply sending former Nazis to the Gulag, and their propaganda efforts were focused much more squarely on getting Germans to accept socialism and remove anti-socialist sentiment, rather than to renounce their entire history and culture and accept responsibility collectively for Nazi atrocities. You can see how different the approach was from the American effort just from these few details. Now, at the top level, successive American governments came to lose interest in the denazification program as they became more embroiled in the Cold War. In 1949, Horkheimer and Adorno returned to Frankfurt and re-established the Institute of Social Research. Around this time, the US formally handed over control of the process to the Germans, who would now be responsible for their own re-education. Now, it strikes me that since this time, since 1949, 1950, the institutions and processes that were set up in the direct aftermath of World War II continued largely unchecked. The definition of fascism didn't stop with the German people or with German culture. Over time, it expanded to include European culture as a whole, British culture, and indeed American culture. No one person needed to be in charge of this. It worked almost by itself. As Frankfurt School type thought came to dominate Western universities in the 1960s and onwards, not as the result of infiltration from Moscow, but as a form of continuation from systems, institutions, and programs that had been set up by the Frankfurt School and their allies in the 1940s. If the original sin of the Germans was to be the Holocaust, each other country would find its own original sin. In Britain, it was the empire and colonialism. In America, it was slavery and racism. Now, in 2020, all of these things have coalesced into one unifying concept called whiteness. And for the re-education program finally to be completed, of course, the symbols of these things must be destroyed, or else the new mindset cannot take root. In other words, the denazification program never ended. It only expanded itself to include more and more things under the definition of fascism. That's why Antifa see themselves as fighting fascism. So now you know what Yuri didn't tell you.
If you like Academic Agents content on this channel, sign up for a course on the Academic Agency. He's now offering Foundations of Economics. Click the link in the show description and level up your econ knowledge.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.